Hi friends, I'm back again with chapter 6, training and development, my favorite subject, my favorite topic. I'm a trainer. So let's see how it rolls out. I've got a lot of inputs to give you. We'll go by the book and I'll also give you some more inputs from my experience as a trainer, as a behavioral coach. So let's get on with it. What are the objectives of this particular chapter? After studying this chapter, you'll be able to understand the nature of training and development, how training process is conducted in an organization, the different methods of training, how a training program is evaluated, the different barriers to an effective training program. The structure, 7 parts to it with the additional summary, nature and importance of training and development, 6.1, benefits of training and development, that's followed by process of training and development, various methods of training and development, feedback of a training program, evaluation of a training program, and what are the barriers to an effective training. And we end up with a summary. So here, we start off with this depiction out here, nature and importance of training and development. Now this depiction shows you on the x-axis we have time. On the x-axis, we have time. On the y-axis is skills, right? Now, 1 indicates the day I joined the company, first day. And R is indicating the day I retire or resign. Let's take it as retirement, assuming that you're working in the same company throughout your working life cycle. So when I join a company on the first day, I am joining the company because of a domain skills of mine. Let's say I'm a software engineer. So I'll be using, as a software engineer, they're taking me, not because of other qualities. I'm good at that. I've done my graduation in an engineering college in IT. So as a fresher, they take me, and the technical skills is what I'll be depicting. I'll be actually using my technical skills largely. The full extent of will be technical skills on the day 1. So I'm there. Some work will be given to me. I'll be doing the coding job and I'll be working at the laptop with my technical skills. This is called a domain skills or technical skills. This is what you are doing. There are 2 parts to any job. Job and job holder. This is a job you are doing. Whether I do it or somebody else does it, the job has to be done. That is a technical or the domain part of the job. Right? As the days progress, I start socializing. I have my team. I am a team leader, I have got my project manager. And as I'm going ahead, I'll have to also develop. I'll be using less of my core skills and I'll have to also develop more of a very important part of working life, which is human skills. Networking with people, getting along with them, developing the soft skills to manage yourself and people around you. Now all this is a part of the human skills. So as, let's say that after we talk about 1 year or 2 years later, 6 months later, you'll have a combination of technical and human skills. As time progresses, you'll find that you are using more of human skills. Networking, getting work done through people. Your domain skills are still intact, but you don't have to do that. You are getting promoted to go to higher levels. So from a coder or a programmer, you are becoming a team leader. And then from team leader, you become a PM, project manager, and a project director and so on. So as you're going up the ladder, you'll find that the human skills have to be more. You may know what is coding, you may know program, but you don't have to do it now. You are more, your job profile demands that you must have more of human skills of networking, making things done by involving people, having teams interacting with each other. That's your main job. Now, as you grow further, we also need to develop what is called as a conceptual skills, the 3rd one which I mentioned there. So let's say about 8-10 years down the line, what is a conceptual skill? It's basically you should learn to understand that your job, which is basically a specialized job, you're a programmer, you're in the IT department, that's your job. That is not seen in isolation by you anymore as you're going up. This is more of a general management functions which you need to understand. How is my work impacting the other departments, who are my user departments? How is my work impacting the company's overall performance? So this umbrella understanding, I call it, is a conceptual understanding. That conceptually, I must learn to understand how my work is contributing to the larger part of the organization and other departments. So I see the coordinated connection between my department and others. So if I'm going, as I'm going higher towards the retirement stage, this is an essential part of a skill which everyone needs to learn, so that they don't look at themselves in isolation that I'm an IT expert. I've spent about 15 years or 20 years in IT. I know only IT. I don't know about anything else. Then you'll be working in isolation. When you work in isolation in today's organization, you can't network, because today's organizations are matrix organizations. They are all working with each other and unto each other department wise. So it's important for you to learn to develop this coordination skills. Conceptual skills is nothing but coordination skills, learning to coordinate with other departments, learning to know how they operate, what are their issues and what is their way of functioning, etc., etc. Obviously, what happens is you'll be moving away from your domain way of thinking into other non-domain way of thinking and try to learn from them. For example, you want to learn about something to do with the finance and you're not a finance person by your background. Then there are some trainings given to you, finance for non-finance people. So you learn to attend that, understand more things. You don't have to go into the depth of finance. But since you're rising up the ladder, you need to know how the finance things operates. And that is true with every field, which is where you need to get inducted, so that you see the overall, the picture of the organization with an expertise in your one own single department where you've been working. This is expected as you grow higher, say 15, 20 years in the company, you're supposed to know this. Further down, a new thing has been added recently that is called design skills. Now, design skills are very unique. This is highly customer-focused skills. Customer-focused skills. There's a subject called design thinking. I'm writing a book on that. Design thinking is a sunrise approach which has been popularized worldwide in the last about a decade or so. And in a design thinking, what am I doing? I'm going beyond looking at my job only with respect to what I am offering and what you're giving based on the feedback that you have given me. What do we normally do? We have a customer and we take a customer feedback. This is what I want. And we make it for them and give it to them. Whether it's a service or a product, this is a marketing approach. Giving the customer what he wants. We go one step further in design. We say that his wants, his needs, etc., his desires are driven by his behavior and habits. And we study and map his habits. And we try to see what is it that suits him. When you buy a product, you're making a certain amount of compromise. But in a design thinking, we ensure that your compromise is minimum or zero. It's a different science altogether, different area. I'm not going to elaborately talk about it right now. But suffice it to say, in one single sentence, this is a customer-centric skill. Everyone in the company need not be the marketing person. Anybody and everybody in the company needs to develop a design skill these days. Which means I'm working in a factory as a production engineer, far removed from the customer who is somewhere outside. I don't even know him. But do I have an approach while I'm producing the goods, while I'm producing the product? Do I look at the product as if the customer is in front of me, I'm going to offer him the product? Do I think of the customer and his various needs? This information anyway comes to you from your back office, from the other departments. But are you oriented in your thinking? Although you're not from a marketing department, although you're not in a customer interface department, are you into that thinking or not? Now those type of orientations are happening in many companies, wherein every person, even in the back office, is design thinking person. A very progressive company which has to be globally connected, which has to globally thrive, needs to have design skills also as a part of its skills development program. So in this particular diagram, what I have shown you is four skills we are supposed to be in touch with: technical or domain skills in which you are an expert. It comes from your background, your education background, and maybe experience. Human skills, conceptual skills, and design skills. The most critical, the remaining three, human, concept, and design, is largely determined by your human skills. Remember that. So, 2 points I've given below this particular depiction. I've given you the definition of what is training and what is development. Two different terminologies which is usually misused by people. When you're a student of HR, you're supposed to know the terminologies in the proper manner. Training is a systematic and periodic upgradation of the technical or the domain skills of the employee. That is a job upgradation. I'm a mechanical engineer. I passed out almost 3 decades back. And I was a production engineer. The production facilities those days were of a certain nature. They were non-automated. We had automation in certain select parts of the plant where I was working. My plant had about 10 to 15, maybe 20% automation. Rest of it was all machines were there. And progressively the components used to get machine from machine to machine so that you get the finished goods. Non-automatic. Now, after about 10 years, 15 years after I started working as a production engineer, as a trainee, the production center changed in its composition, in the way it was producing. Technology came in and slowly semi-automation started. Obviously, an engineer like me had to go through a certain type of a training. I had to upgrade my job upgradation skills. I had to upgrade it. So I had to go and learn that. But that learning doesn't take much time because I already have a base of what is production. I have to tweak. So in the tweaking, the upgradation takes place. As simple as that. So it doesn't take much time. A good engineer who is working in the shop floor for some time, for him to do upgradation is very easy. Technical upgradation is training, the non-human part of it. Now, as days progress, we have to also go through development. What is development? It's a systematic and periodic upgradation of the human, the conceptual, and the design skills of the employee. This is the job holder upgradation. Job holder is me, the human being, and this human being has to go through developing human upgradation, conceptual upgradation, and design upgradation. And this is highly subjective, and call it a comedy or a tragedy, it is one's choice. Some people refuse to develop human relations because of their personality. They don't realize that their job is at stake. They don't realize they need to network. They don't do that. They refuse to look at other departments. They refuse to develop conceptual skills. Design skills is a far distant cry. Now, human conceptual design skills are all to do with the person, the job holder. Now, this development is an ongoing process because from position to position when you travel, from a junior level to a middle level to top management level, every level that you're going up, you need to develop, generate a new behavior. The behavior that a frontline salesman has is good for that job. But the moment he becomes an area manager under whom there are other salesmen reporting, he has to develop skills of how to lead a team, how to manage a conflict, how to be a good leader, how to empower them, etc. So he needs to go through development also. Ages ago, companies used to have only training. And then when you go to the next level, they used to give a training of that particular level. That's all. Among many trainers like me, we initiated this development for at all levels in certain organizations, in certain sectors of the industry. And we were sort of suggesting to them that with every upgradation, ensure that there's a behavioral training also given. And today I'm here. I am a trainer. For every upgradation in certain companies where I'm doing training, there's a behavioral module that is administered to them so that those people develop a behavior which is in line with the new status. So development is ongoing. With every upgradation, two things are important, training and development. Training is the job upgradation. From a HOD, from a head of the department, where I'm handling a certain type of a job functions, budgets, strategies, taking care of my boys who are working with me, I'm promoted to become an AVP. There the job functions are different. So I need to get oriented to that type of thing that is in training. So I must know what are the additional things I need to do and what are the things I have to wean out, not do. Then comes my development. How well am I absorbing it? How well as a person that I am, how well am I absorbing it? And how am I developing the human skills required for that position? the conceptual skills required for that position, the design skills required for that position. Now, this is a very tricky thing. You may be very successful when you're rising up the ladder in terms of deliverables. But when you go to the higher levels, these personal attributes are tested. How good you are in human skills, how good you are in conceptual skills, how good you are in design skills. It is not just soft skills, it is much more than that. So this is a development. And development is ongoing. A developmental trainer like me has to do hand-holding, etc., which I'll be discussing down the line. Right? So this is giving the snapshot about how the training and development space operates. Right? So now we are at the benefits of training and development 6.2. Training benefits the organization and employees in the following way. It leads to improved profitability. It improves the job knowledge and the skills at all levels of the organization. Definitely. Improves relationship between employer and employee. Why does it improve relationship? I'm delegating some job to you. You're my junior. So when I give a training to you, you know how to do the job. When you know how to do the job, you deliver it. And that is the reason why I'm delegating a job to you, because you know the job. You're supposed to know the job. So my relationship between you develops better. If I had not given you training and I just put you on the job, you will learn by fits and starts. At the same time, I'm expecting results from you ASAP, as soon as possible. Then we may have a relationship issue. Then I'll start, if I'm not properly matured, I'll start looking at you from as a liability, not as an asset. And I'll start blaming you. He said, you're a fool. You're not learning anything. Stuff like that. In quite a few companies, they don't have a structured training when you take up an employment. They say, let's put it on the job. Fair enough. When you put somebody on the job, give him time to learn and adapt. That's very important. You put him on the job and the very next day you're expecting results from him. That's a little unrealistic and the person gets put off. In extreme cases, they leave the company. So I would rather say that if you're investing in so many things in the company, you invest on training also. Ensure that, give him a few days of training or something and put him operational. When you become operational, you deliver. When you deliver, your relationship with your employer, employer means your immediate boss, and in turn the other bosses above, it starts improving. Certainly. It helps in the overall organizational development. Organizational development has got two dimensions. One is change process. There's a change that is going on in the industry, in the industry to which you belong, and overall in the economy itself, and overall with the consumers. That change has to be incorporated with a change of skill sets in the whole company. So I do a lot of OD intervention, they'd call it. Organization development intervention, we call it. So an organization, on an ongoing process, groups of people are given two skills. One is how to handle change, and the other one is how to handle the collective behavioral change also, theirs and others. It's an ongoing thing. It takes place over a period of time. Overnight behaviors don't change. They take some time. The next point is the organization gets more effective decision-making and problem-solving skills. Definitely. When I know what I'm doing, my decision-making becomes easier. I'm not at crossroads. I'm not at sea. I don't blink at things because I do not know. In fact, I would say that people who do not know should ask questions. There are three skills you're supposed to learn: communication, decision-making, and problem-solving. Decision-making becomes a big pain when you do not communicate. So ask questions. So when you go through a training, you're supposed to be knowing what you are doing and you know exactly what is expected. So the decision-making becomes easier. And when you make a wrong decision, a barrier comes up. That's a problem. And so you also learn how to solve the problem. So problem-solving skills also become more effective. What are the benefits of training and development? It helps employees to adapt to change. I spoke about it sometime back. If I learn skills today, I can be able to handle tomorrow. And that's what companies are doing. They are giving you skills today which you need for tomorrow. I learned to face a camera and give a video lecture like this ages ago. So it becomes very comfortable for me to adapt and deliver the lecture very smoothly because I have developed the skill. Now, there may be a new technology coming up sometime later. I have to quickly learn to adapt to the new change. The online sessions which I conduct, which my colleagues and I, we conduct, is something which is very uniquely different from the classroom sessions. So we need to adapt to that particular change that came to us years ago when we joined this particular assignment. So the training was given. Training means we just got into the adaptation. It took some time and then quickly we were into the job. Again, training is and development, both are absorbed with the willingness of the participant. You've got to be willing. And you've got to realize one thing, that change is a constant. Change is anyway going to happen. So learning is an important part of training and development, and you should be a willing learner. The next point given in the slide is improves the interpersonal skills, thus helping to improve the boss-subordinate relationship, subordinate-subordinate relationship, and the relationship between the various departments and the functions in an organization. Very simple. When I'm trained, I know the job. I know my skills. When I develop, I know how to deal with people. There's a lot of comfort. With comfort comes confidence, knowledge, comfort, confidence. So when the confidence comes, I'm more matured when it comes to interpersonal skills with people. That's exactly what happens. It builds togetherness and cohesiveness in a group. Group cohesiveness or the group acting like one, working like a team, and the group being always joined with each other, every member, and they work with a uniform goal. Definitely it happens. Now here is a depiction about the process of training and development as a flowchart. Assess training needs. What do we do to arrive at this? You first assess the training needs, then you derive the training objectives. Then we go to the designing the training program itself, implementing training program and evaluating the training program. Now when I say training here, it also includes training and development. Okay. Now let me take it further, broken up into bullet points. Assessment of training needs, deriving training need, training objectives, designing training program, implementation of the training program and evaluation of the training program. These are the five steps, wherein there are others also which I'll be explaining. Assessment of the training needs. Now let's understand what is meant by assessment of training needs. Like I told you, every change or a change that is about to happen, there is a need to upgrade your domain skills. So I must, when I'm assessing, the first point is I must assess what is the purpose of the training? What is the purpose of training this person? Am I just sending him just because there's a training budget? Is he a person who's an incumbent or a candidate to go to take up a new type of a skill? So that purpose has to be very clearly defined. Assessment gives a direction to the training and the development program. When the training purpose is clear, is identified, then I know that in this direction I need to give a training. For example, a person who's been a salesman in one city, traveling within the city, is suddenly asked to take intercity sales assignment. He's asked to go to other cities. Let's say he's in Mumbai, he has to go to Mumbai, Baroda, he has to go to Bangalore and many other cities. Now, when he's trained into handling business in other cities, it becomes easy. It gives him a direction about how to, once the assessment is done, it gives a direction as to how we need to train him so that he gets adapted to the new situation. Right? Third point is it ensures that the training is in line with the goals of the organization. Obviously, organization expects certain things to happen and they're expecting certain employees to develop certain skill sets. So in the training, the skill sets are given to you and thereby you are aligning yourself with the goals of the organization. Very simple. Fourth point, it ensures that the career path of the employees grow, which in turn creates a better quality of life. All of you will agree. With every training, with every development also, which is being done by the company for you, imagine, your personal life also improves. You get more clarity. You get more focus. You're out of chaotic situations when it takes to decision making. Not only in the workplace, but also in your personal life it happens. Is it not true? It gives you an overall better quality of life. Not only quality of life at the workplace, overall better quality of life. So we always say be a learner, a lifelong learner. And whenever there's a learning opportunity that comes to you, grab it. There are quite a few people, they look at learning as a pain. Learning has to be seen as an opportunity for you to grow and adapt for the impending changes of the future. Learning should be seen as an opportunity for you to imbibe skills so that in the future you can apply it. It should be an exciting journey, not something which is painful. People are equating learning as books. People are equating learning as, you know, books, and people who are got allergy to learning, to books or to academic things, they think that learning is not my cup of tea. And they jump into learning on the job. I'll start doing it and then see. That's fair enough. Nothing wrong about it. But in that, this quality of life is not really enhanced. It becomes better when you go through a systematic process of growth, both in training as well as development. If you jump into a business and learn everything from scratch by trial and error, fair enough, you'll do a good business. But pause and ask yourself a question. What sort of a quality of life that person has? Does he have a balance? He's old into business, not caring for the family. When he cares for the family, he's going overboard. There's a certain personality that balances when you do something systematically like this. Point number five, it assists or helps the organization to gain an edge over the competitors. Definitely. This is what we call learning organization. A learning organization is one where every person is into the learning curve. They invest in learning and development. L&D, that's a new terminology we use. Learning and development. And when you learn and develop, what happens? The company is always ahead of the competitors. They offer the customers some products or service which the competitors are yet to even do an R&D on. Point number six, assessment occurs at two levels. At the group level, what is expected of the group in terms of skill sets and behaviors? At the individual level. Individual level, new skills have to be developed. At the group level, we need to have certain group skills. How to deal with a certain new change in the customer profile. And also in the organization strategy. The organization strategy is set at the top, and the group change has to ensure that they have to fall in line with this changing strategy, with the changing times. Right? The process of training and development, the deriving training objectives. Assessment of training needs helps in preparing a blueprint that describes the objectives to be achieved by the trainee upon completion of the training program. Blueprint is the point to be underlined here. It gives me a framework, it gives me a blueprint. It tells me this is what I'm supposed to do. It's a starting point of designing the training program. Training objectives provide the input for designing the training program as well as measuring the effectiveness of the training program. It's like planning. You know, we learned in principles of management, planning, organizing, etc. So we are planning it. So when we plan it, I know how effective it will be. It will be after the execution is over. If I don't plan, if there's no proper framework, we won't be able to assess what is what. The effectiveness will not be known, right? Designing a training program, it should address who would participate, which employee, which manager, who would be the trainer. Then I would also ask one more question not given in the slide. Why would he participate? What is expected from him? Now, who would be the trainer? Whether the trainer will be in-house within the company or somebody external like me? What would be the methodology? What would be the method of training? Am I going to train in a classroom fashion like a lecture? Lecture is not a training, by the way. Am I going to take them outbound? Am I going to make it residential? Am I going to give them part lectures and part case studies? So that is called as methodology. At what level the training should be imparted? And what would be the learning principles, the learning values? These have to be properly mapped. Once the training needs are known, then I need to design the training program. I need to structure it. The flow. So let's say it's a two-day training program on, say, team building. Then if it's a non-residential program, a typical format is there's a program which starts at 9 in the morning and ends at, say, 5:30. So it is broken up into four sessions, 9 to, say, 11 o'clock. Then we have a small coffee break, 11:15 to, let's say, 1 o'clock. Then we have a lunch break, 1 to 1:30 maybe. And then from 1:30 to, let's say, we go up to, say, 3:30 or 3 o'clock. And then again, a 15-minute afternoon tea break. And then at 5:30, we conclude. So, 4 sessions in a day. So, 2 days, 8 sessions, typically. Now, I must know how the flow should be when I design it. What am I going to do in session 1? How am I going to set the trend? How is it going to flow next? Based on the interactions from the participants, I may have to make some flexibility in my approach. Suffice it to say, my dear friends, when a training design is made, the training design is always made with a certain amount of flexibility, which you're supposed to look into when the training is getting unfolded, when the implementation is happening. Because try as much you may to get all the details about how the training has to go, there still remains something which is unexpressed by default. So when I'm actually in the training program, the managers come out with some need, which is a part of the objective of the training. So that need is something I have to address in conjunction with the observer who's there. There'll be somebody from the department, some observer who'll be directing the whole thing. Sometimes they don't do, but then I have to be sensible enough to know that this is what they want as a part of the package, which may not be addressed while I'm designing the training. So I need to deliver that also. So what I call it as the design of the training program should have a water logic flexibility. Water logic flexibility. It's not that I have 20 PPTs, I start reading out from them, and I'll stick only to that, even if their demand is something different. Ultimately, you're the customer, you're the trainee, and you want something which is really required, which was due to some reason not articulated. So this filling up the gaps, tying up the loose threads is something that the trainer should be sensitive about. And after taking interactions, taking approvals, this has to happen. Okay. Next comes the implementation of the training from the actual delivery. Choosing a proper trainer is very important in the implementation of a training program. Now, when I say proper, means the trainer has to rigorously ask a lot of questions to the company, to the HR people, to the concerned user departments, and all the people. And he has to ensure that he is capturing as much of real-time information about how the training has to unfold. It's not theory. It's all about the practical part of what is expected from the training. Many times, they articulate something with the best of interests, but I interpret it differently, and vice versa. So we have to arrive at something which is tangible and understood on both sides. So the trainer has to ensure, a good trainer is one who will talk to the management, check and cross-check whether they are on the proper track, and create a framework, a template, which can be modified during the design, during the implementation. So this is a very important part of the training, choosing a proper trainer. And the proper trainer means that proper trainer is one who's got multiple skills with him or her. It's not enough to have only human skills. If you're connected with industry, if you're regularly, you're in touch with what's going on, and you know the state of art of what is going on today, relevant to the changing times, that makes a proper trainer. Second point is, when the design of the training programs is clear, it becomes easy to communicate the purpose of the training to the trainer. There's where the designing comes, there's where the communication comes. The communication once, twice, thrice. When I am called upon by a company to conduct a training program, I have the first meeting, and then soon I have the second meeting. Physically, I meet them one-on-one, and then I clarify things, because I want to do a good job if they appoint me as a trainer. That's the way I look at my work. And in doing that, they get a clarity, even I get a clarity, both of us are in sync with each other. This is very important, right? Now we come to evaluation of the training. The training program is over and the training program gets evaluated. There are two terms, evaluation and feedback. I'm talking about feedback a little later. I've included that in the book because that is something which is misunderstood. People think that evaluation and feedback are same. They are both different. Now, what is evaluation? Some points are given on the slide. Evaluation helps in determining the effectiveness and the results of the training program. You are being sent for a training program for a certain purpose. Is the purpose served? You are being sent for a developmental workshop for a purpose. Is the purpose served? There's a certain behavior the company is expecting out of you. Have you generated that behavior? If you've done it, irreversibly. You know why? Because behaviors cannot change overnight. That's where follow-up sessions come. So you go through a training program today, a developmental workshop. After that, there's a follow-up. And then you're monitored in between. Once the management and everybody around you thinks that you've changed your behavior from B1 to B2, from B1 to B2, irreversibly, then we know that you are in the new position, your effectiveness has improved. Now, what is B1 and B2? Is behavior measurable? No. But something else is measurable. With a behavior B1, I am producing a result R1. That is measurable. With a certain behavior, I am giving a deliverables, R1. But year after year, the company wants you to go for higher achievements. From R1, I've got to achieve R2. If R1 is 100 units, I have to achieve 200 units next year. Now for the 200 units, new target or new achievement goal, I need to have a different behavior, B2. That's where the development comes. Right? So when do they evaluate? They evaluate after they are convinced that the development process has brought about the effectiveness in the person's behavior. Okay? Point number two, it helps in determining whether the training objectives are achieved or not. Does the training objective that is agreed upon, that is clear what needs to be done, has it been done or not done? The evaluation actually determines that. Number three, questionnaire is a simple method used to evaluate the training program. Usually they give a questionnaire, but that is not enough. That is not enough. You have to observe, you have to listen, you have to do many things post-questionnaire. Merely a questionnaire, a copy, soft or a hard copy, doesn't say that the evaluation is over. Sometimes the evaluation runs for 3 months down the line, 4 months, 6 months down the line to really be very sure whether the effectiveness has happened of the training. Training programs are evaluated for their cost effectiveness. Companies investing on the training in terms of time, money, manager time, etc. So that they have to counterweigh with the amount of expenditures they're going in for. Everything, you know, training room, hiring, or going to a hotel or a resort, paying the trainer his fees, etc., etc. Now, they have to ensure that it's proportionate. And that is a part of the evaluation. We have spent so much, are we getting back the ROI, return on investment? Number five, training costs include needs assessment costs, salaries of the training and the development staff, the trainers themselves, costs and program development costs. All this is a part of the training costs. Thank you very much.